Welcome to Monday's Scramble. I'm Rex Hoggard. He's Jay Coffin. We both work for GolfChannel.com, but today we work for you. And on today's Monday Scramble, the rundown. Spieth shines in Texas. Jordan Spieth gets off the schneid. Big three showdown at the Memorial. Of course, you got a lot going on this week in golf. And Hostler for the Haskins Award. All this we'll get into and more. Good morning, Jay. How are you?
What's going on, Rexy? You know, Jordan Spieth gets off the schneid, the five-month schneid.
That's right.
I know it seems like it was longer, but, you know, all right, whatever.
Is it a little ridiculous?
Is that where we are these days?
Is it a little ridiculous?
Five-month schneid. All right.
Well, and he points out that, you know, he did pretty well at the Masters, which was just three starts ago.
That's what I hear.
It's not too bad. We'll also be joined by Will Gray. And actually, let's bring Will in right now. He was at Colonial at the Dean and DeLuca Invitational last week. He saw Jordan Spieth in person. Will, what'd you make of that performance?
I think if only we could all have droughts like Jordan Spieth, I think we'd all be better for it. It was a convincing performance, a convincing win, and it was one that I think kind of let Jordan Spieth let his guard down a little bit afterwards in speaking about just how much the scars and the ghosts of Augusta National were still kind of haunting him.
Well, that's a handsome picture of Will that we just had up, by the way. I got to hand it to you, Will. That's a very good mugshot right there. Now,
I'm trying to bring out the best for you.
You're bringing the heat on that one. You wrote a really good column. He actually got motivated by someone saying something to him in the crowd as he made the turn, referring to what happened at Augusta. And it was fascinating to me because all along, Jordan has said that, look, it's not going to bother me. I've moved on. Clearly, that was a bit of a mind game. I mean, if you listen to what he said on Sunday after the victory, he's still living with those scars, and they're going to continue to be with him, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was amazing sitting in the press conference afterwards. Someone asked him a question about what it was like to finally win in Texas, and he went out of his way to pivot that into an answer about the Masters and about how difficult it was answering all the questions in every single interview room, having to go through the same song and dance after giving away a second green jacket. But it certainly created a level of relief. I think we saw him more relaxed in that post-round press conference than we've seen him in a while. But I think that there's kind of three different stages of getting over that Masters collapse. The first one is getting this win. The second one, he's still going to have another set of questions to go through anytime he steps up to a major until he wins a third major title. And then the third level is going to be every spring at Augusta. He's still going to be, you know, if he goes another 5 years without winning the Masters, that's sixth year, he'll still be asked about the 12th hole. But for now, this at least got him a semblance of relief. And as we said, it's the second win of the year. It seems like that eight-shot romp in Maui is a lot more than 4 months ago. But right now, Spieth's cooking with gas.
You're right, Will. So he checked the box on the one. The second one could be, well, we'll come up in a couple weeks at Oakmont, right, the next time he's had a major, and then the third we'll just have to wait till next April. You're right. And while I love his honesty and I love him bringing up the Masters and not being afraid, I love all that. My question to you, though, is what changed in just three short days, though? You know, from sort of the pouty, frustrated dude that we saw the week before the Byron Nelson until this, was it just a matter of time or was there something noticeably different this time?
He seemed a little bit more, he seemed in a better place pretty much from the first start of the week when he spoke to the media on Wednesday. I think it really helped to have a venue shift away. You know, it's still a Dallas-Fort Worth area, but he was the star at the Byron Nelson. You know, he's got a deal with AT&T, the title sponsor. He had some stuff to do with them. So this is much more, you know, he's kind of second fiddle at this event to a couple other guys. And more importantly, it's a course that he really loves. I think he has more of an allegiance to the Dallas event, but I think Colonial really suits his game better. He hasn't finished worse than 14th at this event. It's an old-school course that really, you know, it's a ball striker's place that you need to shape your shots. And he spoke about how he and caddy Michael Greller really put together a game plan of making sure that their misses were missing in the right places and making sure that they were still making par at worst on a lot of the holes. He went a streak of 28 straight holes without a bogey during the second and third round, so that was clearly an objective that they achieved. But I think it was just a little bit of venue shift and really getting onto a course where he has had some past success, and that just created an extra level of confidence and relaxation that helped him get over the hump.
All right, well, let's kick the can up the road to Memorial. Now, this is a big win on a number of fronts. I jokingly referred to him getting off the schneid, but this three-stroke victory sets up a big three and beyond showdown at Memorial next week, where you have Jason Day, coming off a victory in his last start at TPC. You have Rory McIlroy coming off a victory in his last start at the Irish Open, and now Jordan Spieth coming off a victory at Colonial. And then you look at the field as we're showing it right now on down. Ricky Fowler's there, Dustin Johnson's there, Bubba Watson. I mean, it is a stacked field. This could be the best field of the year after the players.
All things considered.
Yeah, all things considered. How do you see this shaping up? We always want to frame the narrative of the big three, but it really seems like it goes beyond that, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that the way the schedule sets up, this is always kind of seen as U.S. Open light, you know, it's a great golf course, Jack Nicklaus's event, a tough test and all that. But I think this year, especially just the, as you said, you've got the top five in the world all playing and so many of these guys coming in with momentum. This is a storyline that we saw playing out before the Masters, where so many top-ranked players were winning when it was Adam Scott and Bubba and Jason Day. And right now, we're having it repeat itself heading into Oakmont, that you've got all of the top three players coming in off a win. A lot of players have some momentum. I mean, Ricky Fowler's having a great season. Bubba Watson won earlier this year at Riviera. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, I think that the edge might go a little bit to Spieth. He's played well at this event before. Jason Day, it's certainly a de facto home game for him living in Ohio, so there's that little bit of an extra edge. But, you know, you've got to think that we're going to have one of that group is going to come out and play really well and anoint himself as the U.S. Open favorite, and someone's going to come out and miss the cut, and we're going to say, what's wrong with them, you know, one week after they had their hands on a trophy. That's just kind of how it goes.
Well, Will, I had this great question all ready to go and fired, and you just answered my question at the back end of that question. My God, what kind of a world are we living in? I wasn't going to ask you to pick a winner, but my question was going to be, whose momentum do you like most? And it does sound that you would favor Spieth then.
Yeah, I think so. Because it's, again, another course that he's going to that he really likes. He shot 65 in the final round at this event last year to finish tied for third. You know, it's a course that can bite anyone. We've seen a lot of guys shoot over 80, including Spieth, at this event. But he just seems to be in a good place. You know, I'm certainly not going out of my way to bet against Jason Day. I think that those two have great similarities in this year in terms of their bad weeks are still, what, T18, T23, things like that. So I think that they're both going to be in the mix and in contention. But we saw last year and this year certainly with Day as well, but Spieth really can get hot and stay hot with the short game, and especially that putter. He had 9 putts over the back 9 to win at Colonial. That's about as good as you can ask for.
Okay, Willie, real quick before we let you go, I know you're in travels coming home from Dallas, but we do want to get your thoughts on Tiger Woods. Another event, another Friday deadline, and another no-show from Tiger Woods. We're getting to the point in the season where it's getting early late, where if he comes back, I mean, it's hard to believe that he would come back for the U.S. Open, but if he does come back for that particular major, you're only looking at 3, 4, maybe 5 starts before the end of the season. Is it even worth it at this point for him to come back?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, as you mentioned, the schedule is really shortening up on him. He's probably not going to qualify for the FedEx Cup playoffs. He wouldn't qualify for the WGC Bridgestone in Akron, which is one of his favorite venues. You know, I really feel like the only landing spot left for him would be to start at the Quicken Loans National, which is an event that he's tied to, that his foundation helps support and run. And that would kind of springboard him into making a start at the Open Championship and perhaps PGA. But I think really a lot of people had circled, you know, this two-step of Memorial and then the U.S. Open as a way for him to get his feet under him. And once he decided not to play at the Memorial, I think the overwhelming likelihood right now is that we're not going to see Tiger Woods until next season, potentially the fall, maybe his hero event in the Bahamas in December. But, you know, I think the odds are that he's not going to play again this season.
All right, well,
actually.
No, I think I would agree with you on that one. Thank you so much for joining us. Safe travels. We'll see you in a couple of days, pal.
See you, Will.
Sounds good. See you, boys.
All right, same question to you. I mean, I think Will did a good chance of wrapping it up. But in the meeting before this show, we talked about the idea that, let's say he does come back and play the Open, which doesn't make a lot of sense for a guy who has spent the better part of 6 months on the DL, is nursing a back that has been giving him problems. Do you really want to start at a U.S. Open with thick rough and long walks?
I don't think you want to start anywhere because
go back and start the Bob Hope now. That's not an option.
I mean, there isn't a logical place. I know we sort of talk about his Quicken Loans event as maybe a warm-up to the Open Championship, not the U.S. Open. okay, maybe, but then that'll be quickly after the U.S. Open, and if he's healthy enough to play in one, should he have played in the previous week at the U.S. Open? We all know the answer is no, because that's the ultimate test. So I think you said it right, though. We are just running out of time, man. There's just no real reason at this point to come back. I'm going to step on the first tee at Troon. I have no idea what that weather's going to be like. It may be beautiful, and it may just be horrendous. Yeah. And you just don't know what you're going to get. So is that going to be the first time you're going to go out there and practice and grind on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then four difficult days, and then take a week off and come back and go kick yourself in the face at Baltusrol? That's the thing too. Tiger Woods, when he comes back with expectations that he's going to play X, Y, and Z, right? And so those aren't the places that he should come back. So at this point, let's just kind of chill out and just be done with it and just call it a season.
Well, and I think at this point, he's almost a victim of his own schedule. When you look at the places where he has played historically, which, you know, in retrospect, it makes his career even that much greater, because he always played the hardest courses against the deepest field. Yep. So I would make the argument that, all right, he's not qualified for the Bridgestone with his WGC. He's not qualified for the playoffs. He's more than three quarters of the way through the season. So he's already playing catch-up if he's hoping to play the playoffs. Maybe he plays Wyndham, which he played last year, which I can't imagine that, you know, he would do. That would be where he's kind of earmarked for his comeback. Yeah. And again, I've always gone back to this, that he's the only guy that knows when he can come back. He's the guy that's on the range in South Florida that's deciding, can I walk four straight days? Can I do what I need to do on the practice tee? Can I avoid injury? Can I avoid soreness? All these are questions that only he can answer.
Well, and he also may not be able to answer them right now.
Yeah.
We still don't know. He is the only guy that can answer them, but he still may not be able to yet, right?
Yeah.
Ultimately, he is the guy, but right now we just don't know. So, you know, I think we know without playing the Memorial, to expect him to show up at Oakmont, it just ain't going to happen.
All right, to rewind here real quick, you asked Will a question. I didn't want to interrupt in the middle of that, but you asked what Jordan did last week. And what he did is just putt like Jordan Spieth. Let's be honest. Nine putts over his last nine holes, man.
Yeah.
Nine putts over his last nine holes. That's hard to beat. I don't care who you are. Yeah. You look what he did. He was first in the field in putting, first in putting distance made. He gained 4.47 strokes on the field on Sunday in strokes gained putting. I don't know what that means, but it seems like that's a pretty good stat. And then you go back to Dallas, which I was in the field. On Sunday, he lost 3.18 strokes on Sunday. So that's the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's him feeling comfortable on certain greens and not feeling comfortable on other greens. But, yeah, I think that was the difference.
It's almost like he woke up on, you know, Thursday morning of the Colonial, or especially Sunday morning of the Colonial, and said, looked himself in the mirror and said, you are Jordan Spieth. Now go play like Jordan Spieth. I know it's not that easy, but it sort of looked that easy. And somebody's got a little more pep in his step.
I always said that golf was at its best when Phil Mickelson was at its best. And the idea behind this was when Phil was at his best, he was always pushing Tiger.
Correct.
And we only had that very few times. We're at the stage now where those three players, Rory, Jordan, Jason, they're all at their best right now. What are the odds that we actually get that Sunday showdown between those three?
Don't tease me, Rexy.
Think about it.
Don't
tease me. What would be the odds of those three going head-to-head? And I am going to disagree with Will on this one. And I know that he likes Jordan's performance from last week. I don't know that Muirfield Village would be the perfect fit for him, as opposed to it being a fit for Jason Day, who practices there and hits the ball a mile, Rory McIlroy, who hits the ball a mile.
Correct.
It seems like a horses for courses deal. Those two would have the advantage, but it's hard to beat those putting stats I just
wondered. It's exactly right. And that's the good thing is now just after these last couple of weeks with Rory doing what he did and Jordan doing what he did, there isn't a wrong answer.
No.
Right? You can justify any one of them for very good reasons, right? I could sit here and say Jason until I'm blue in the face, and then you could tell me why I'm wrong and why it's Rory. And where the beauty is that we're all right. But you're right, though, about I would love to see any two of them. I'd love to see all three of them. But any two of them. That's one of the things that's the biggest BS about the last 20 years. Tiger and Phil never went head-to-head at a major.
Doral.
That stinks.
Doral's the only one I can really think of on a Sunday where
Ever.
They were paired together.
They were paired together at the Masters a few years back where they went on that early run in the front nine, but they were so far behind they were never really in contention.
But you're talking about in the last pairing on a Sunday afternoon.
I'm talking in big, high profile. Those two guys are two of the top 10 best players in the history of golf, and not once in 20 years were the two of them on at the exact same time. That's, I mean, maybe they were. Maybe Tiger beat him by 10 shots, and they were.
Yeah, and he
but
was
that's a, we never saw that. So I try to sort of temper my expectations, I guess is my point, as badly as I want it to happen.
But it's hard the way the stars are coming together right now.
I know, but as badly as I want it, I guess is what I'm saying is that the last 20 years have proved that it just doesn't happen that often. So while I would love it to happen this week at Muirfield or certainly at Oakmont, you know, any combination of those guys, bring Ricky into the mix. You know, love to have Phil at Oakmont, maybe asking too much. It just doesn't happen that often, which is why the last month is so cool, which is what happened with these guys just plucking off wins just like it's nothing.
Going head-to-head. And let's keep in mind, Rory still has not won on the PGA Tour this season. Now, I know that's, you know, it's hard when you look at his schedule.
He won his fifth major.
He won his fifth major, which was the Irish Open. That's the one that's important to him. But I think going forward, when you look at these three, so you'd have to say David Lingmuirth is going to win this week. Like, how does that always add up? Like, eventually, we're going to, no offense to David Lingmuirth or Russell Knox would be my pick this week, but that's who's going to end up winning.
Russell Knox.
It always works out that way, isn't it? All right, let's switch gears to something that's a little bit more predictable. The NCAAs are going on this week.
A little bit.
Yeah, you were in Eugene for the Women's Championship, NCAA Women's Championship. We're down to the Elite Eight right now. Match play starts this morning. It's already underway. There you see number one Texas going head-to-head with Oklahoma. Isn't that called the Red River Rivalry?
It is.
I did not think I could get that out. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I always had
a
hard time.
Say it three times fast.
USC will take on Vanderbilt. LSU, I just picked at the scores. They're up in every single one of their matches against host Oregon. Illinois taking on South Carolina. The big news coming out of yesterday, though, we have an individual champion from the home team on his home course, Aaron Wise. Very impressive performance from that young man.
Yeah, well, before we get to Wise, real quickly, though, the number one seed in match play for the last 7 years has not won.
So no good
the
for
number
Texas.
One, so no good for Texas, although Texas has been one of the best teams all year long and continues to be now. But it is bizarre how that's never played out. But back to Aaron Wise. Super impressed.
Two double bogeys in that final round, by the way.
And still found a way to sort of bounce back pretty good, if you will. You know, I think we probably, not a lot of people, certainly on the East Coast, know that much about him, but he's been really solidly decent all year long. And I think,
solidly decent.
Well, no, but listen, I think he probably should have been one of the favorites. You know, we're going to talk about McNeely, Rahm, McCoy, Hostler, all those guys. And they are the upper echelon. They were the top four guys. But if you've got a guy who's playing on a golf course that he plays three or four times a week and has played three or four times a week every week for the last 2 years, and he's a top 10 player for most of the season, I don't know why you wouldn't put him a favor. It's only because he plays out in Oregon, and in the East Coast, we don't really see him that much. So that's why. But absolutely, you think about the pressure, just as a sophomore, 19-year-old sophomore, he, you know, and he handled it well, saying, hey, it was great. It made me feel good that I had people out here rooting for me. We all know how I would react. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on that young man. I mean, for him to say it didn't bother him is one thing, but it had to have. There's a lot of expectations for Oregon to qualify for the NCAA championship in the first place as a team
that's
playing at home.
Man.
Huge, huge, huge. And then for him to go out there, his team to make it in that top eight, to make the first cut into the top 15, then into the top eight to get into the match play, and then to him to win individually, that's big, big, big time stuff.
Yeah, that was impressive. I mean, and here's the part that I have a hard time with. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know a lot about this young man until I've watched him over the last two or three days, just to see his game. Very impressive. I love the way his bounce back ability reminds me a lot of Jordan Spieth. He followed those double bogeys with birdies. That's always impressive. The one thing that did surprise me is news that he's going to turn pro. Mm-hmm. And I'm not against this by any stretch of the imagination, that if you're a freshman in high school, if you're a freshman in college, if you're a senior in high school, if you feel like you're good enough,
do it.
I don't have a hard time with it because, look, it doesn't happen very often. I don't think it's a problem, at least not in golf like maybe it is in other sports. In this particular case, and I only say this because of the tone right now, the crowded field of young, talented players that are coming out. You have Bryson DeChambeau, who's already turned pro. He's taking up a lot of starts. You have Bo Hostler. You have all these very good players. John Rahm, Maverick McNeely. Yep. They're all going to turn pro. They're all going to eat up spots. I don't know what the rush is for Wise to turn pro right now. Why not go back to Oregon? You have a very good team. Give it one more year.
Yeah, be the top dog or the top duck after another year, after a junior season, when these guys all get weeded out and have a place to play for next year. I agree with that. But it's pretty impressive for us to sort of know that this is what he was going to do and then him to show up in his last college event and do what he did.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. And you're right, I don't knock anybody. Turn pro now, tomorrow, and 5 weeks from now, 5 years from now, do whatever you want to do. you know, I wish him well, but you are right. It is. It's super crowded. And we're looking up, you know, really for the rest of this PGA Tour season, there's not a whole lot of spots left available. There's 6, 7, 8 non-invitational, non-majors, you know, sort of these events that could hand out a couple sponsor exemptions, and they're going to go to some of those other guys that you said. Now, maybe Wise picks off one or two now because he is the NCAA champion, yeah. So he has more opportunity now than he had yesterday at this time, but still, it's crowded.
It's very crowded, and look, we just went through this for 5 minutes about Tiger Woods. The schedule is getting condensed very quickly, and that has a lot to do with just the way the season has shaped out, but you're right, I counted it up. So there would be about 7 events where he could possibly get an exemption. If you factor in all these other guys, mm-hmm. and look, most of these tournament directors only have 2 unrestricted sponsor
right.
exemptions
so we're
talking
about to dole 14 out. Spots?
14 spots between all these guys, and it's going to be hard. Bobby Wyatt's playing very well right now. He's already turned professional. I think he's going to get a handful of them. So it's hard to imagine what the big rush was.
Yep.
It's not as though you're turning pro now to jump into Q school.
No.
It's the system's different. So you're not going to make that jump directly to the PGA Tour. I don't understand it. Now, talking about some of those guys who are going to turn pro, the Haskins watch is on. They're going to dole out the award next Tuesday.
Yep, June 7th at Golf Central.
And I think one of the guys, of course, that we mentioned was Bo Hosser. I think we can probably both agree he would be the favorite
I
right
think
now.
So. Yeah, I think so. I mean, those guys that we all mentioned, I wanted to wait and see how the NCAA played out, right? And then all those guys sort of all finished about the same. Yeah. Rahm, McNeely, McCoy, Hosler, Wise ended up winning. He would have probably been 5th or 6th heading into this week now. So then you make the argument to him winning the NCAA championship. Does that boost him above all those guys? No. Bo Hosler, pretty steady week for 4 days as an individual for Texas, won 5 times all year. To me, was absolutely the best player in college golf. And Lee McCoy came out and said that Bo Hosler should be. So if I've got one of the guys in that mix of 4 who's saying that one of the others should be the guy, I know he's being diplomatic, but he's right.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the 5 wins, 12 top 10s, and his 13 starts.
Showed up every day.
Every single week he shows up. He's 5th at the NCAAs. I mean, I think when you look at what he did, I had a chance to spend some time around him a few weeks ago at the Jones Cup. Mm-hmm. Very mature.
Oh, yeah.
And very complete game, very high golf IQ, all the things that you want to look for.
He's a tour pro.
He's a tour pro. I mean, he's already got the tour game. I mean, I think right now he's still a little young. Yeah, I think he can learn to control his emotions a little bit better, but that's just going to come with time. All right, moving forward now. We just talked about Weiss. Next week, he's going to make that first start in Memphis. There's a lot of things on the line, and it starts this week as far as the Open Championship goes. The Open Championship qualifying series begins this week with the Mizuno Open, and you can get an idea of how these players are getting ready. There you go, the Mizuno Open on the Japan Golf Tour. Those 4 players right now qualified for the Open Championship, which will be held in a few weeks at Royal Troon. They were the top 4 out of the top 12 in ties, and this series will continue. This is a very unique way they've done this, and I think they found a very fair, very different way of doing it, so you don't have to worry about these qualifiers that you see this week on the European Tour. The Nordiep Masters, only 1 spot available, and he has to finish inside the top 5 in ties. Go to the FedEx St. Jude Classic in Memphis in 2 weeks. That will be the top 4 who are in the top 12 in ties going down the list. Quicken Loans, French Open, Greenbrier Classic, and Scottish Open.
So you get 6 spots right there, and you get it. I mean, it's a chance. You're right. I mean, this is open. You know what you're playing for when you're on the first tee. So I think Bo Hosler is going to play. We talked about is going to play at FedEx St. Jude. If he finishes in the top 12, he's in the Open Championship. Because from the NCAAs to the Open Championship in about a month. So, you know, you show up and you play well. You know you've got these 6 chances from right now over the next 6 weeks, and you're in.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Now, I have a soft spot in my heart, and you do too. This goes back to our magazine days when we used to go over, and they had the qualifiers. And they used to have the qualifiers on the Sunday before, and guys would fly over, and you'd play in, you know, one of those cool little links courses that were
Brad
somewhere.
Brad Faxon would do it every year.
Every year he'd show up. And I kind of always had a soft spot in my heart. But I have to admit, with the way the modern schedule works out, you look at the way these qualifiers are now, it gives guys something to aim for.
Totally.
It gives them something to work their schedules around that's not getting on a plane and going over on the Sunday before hoping.
Yep.
And I think that makes all the difference.
Part of it seems random, too, till you sit down and look at it and see how it's spread out globally. And there's nothing random about it.
No.
You're going to South Africa. We go with Sweden or Japan. You know, it's spread. It is the international major. There are people from all planets, and that getting in via that qualifying helps keep that going.
And always cool stories. All right, one little final piece of news. Darren Clark named his 3 vice captains this week. They will be Padraig Harrington, Thomas Bjorn, Paul Laurie. Yep. Does it matter?
No. I don't think so. Although they clearly have a pretty big role, they have in the past anyways. Let's put it that way. And there's no reason to believe that they're going to break form because it's worked out pretty well for the Europeans.
And here's the only part that I find interesting in that whole list is the way they've done it. I mean, let's face it, the United States copied what Europe has done so successfully and created this sort of legacy program for their vice captains going forward. I mean, Jim Furyk, Steve Stricker will probably end up being all Ryder Cup captains. That's the whole idea. The Europeans have been doing this for years and doing it very, very well, but there's one face in that crowd that stands out. I would have never thought that Thomas Bjorn would have gotten a turn, but it seems like, at least if you can read the tea leaves that Darren Clark's laying down, he would get that start. I don't know where it would occur.
I don't know either.
Yeah, going down the list.
But they have a plan.
They always have a plan.
They always have a plan, and it works out. So don't mess with it. Don't mess with it, Rexy. He's going to probably be a cap. You know, Paddy Harrington's going to be.
Harrington was be, and again, Paul Laurie. I don't know that I ever saw him as a Ryder Cup captain,
but maybe not.
But this goes back. Yeah. You know, you could say that about the last couple of captains.
There's a reason.
Yeah, there's always a reason. They have a plan, unlike us. We didn't have a plan. We just went with it. That'll do it for this edition of Monday Scramble. We'll see you guys next week, and check offdanel.com for all the latest news.